Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
If you've ever listened to second captain Kieran Murphy, you know he lives for all things GAA. But on the pitch, he's only played football and never hurling. He decided to change that. So last year, he and his wife upped sticks from Dublin to move down to Gaeltacht na Deise, or Nunaisha, I should say, for the summer, where at 41 years and 10 months, he lined out for the local hurling club, and the highs and many lows of that summer are detailed in a brilliant new book, Old Parish. Kieran, good morning.
Hey Dermot, how are you? What's the crack? Good morning.
Yeah, you know what? When I saw your book, it immediately resonated because I go up to our local GAA, Bin Éidir in Howth in Dublin with my daughter. She's 14 and she plays camogie in football. And we hit the schlitter around with the hurlies. And part of me is I'm running around, I'm, you know, getting it up and whacking here, there and everywhere. I'm thinking, do you know what? I never really played hurling, but I think I could be good at this. And I get the feeling you fell into the same trap.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. No, I am. So, yeah, I think really my dog is to blame. During COVID, I would have gone hurling in my locality in Kilmainham in Dublin with my dog. And basically, somewhere this dog of mine managed to figure out that if she drops the ball, I'll keep hitting it for her, rather than if she just runs around with the ball in her mouth, which is what she'd been doing for kind of the previous 8 years of her life. So I'm on a GA pitch. I'm poking the ball around for my dog, and there's a goalpost at the end of the field. And you know, you've got a hurley, you've got two slithers. You know, you're like, I might as well take a swing at this. You know, so then I'm down there every day. I'm closing my eyes. I'm imagining I'm Joe Canning. I'm positioning myself in various parts of the field, and sometimes they go over. That's a nice feeling, Dermot. You know, that's an enjoyable feeling. And so, you know, this idea starts to kind of percolate in my mind, you know, because I grew up in a GAA household in Galway, which is one of the maybe dozen counties that you can say takes the game of hurling very, very seriously. When I was 11, say, when I was 8, I remember watching Galway losing the 1990 All-Ireland Hurling Final to Cork. And I don't remember Italia 90 at all. I don't remember being emotionally engaged in Italia 90 really in any real sense. I remember it being on, but I don't remember being upset or elated or anything. I remember bawling my eyes out when Galway lost the All-Ireland Hurling Final in 1990 to Cork. So I've been emotionally invested in hurling my entire life. I've watched it my entire life. I grew up in Galway, which is a huge stronghold of hurling. And yet I never got the chance to play hurling because of the quirks of geography, basically. I was born in northeast Galway in a place called Milltown. Football only. It's a monotheistic culture. There's only Gaelic football, not rugby, not soccer, not hurling. 25 miles down the road, if I'd grown up in Athenry or Kilkenyron or any of these places, I wouldn't have been able to play any football. It would have been just hurling. So I always kind of felt the loss of that in a way, you know, in a weird way. I'm like, am I less of an Irishman for not having played hurling? You know, Declan Lawn, the BBC showrunner, he writes that brilliant show, Blue Lights.
Yeah.
He gave me a great line. He took up hurling very late in life as well. He said, in the heart of every it's not Churchill, some English luminary said, in the heart of every Englishman is a deep regret that they never served in the military, you know. And for Declan Lawn, he always said, in the heart of every Irishman, there's a deep regret that he was never at any stage in his life a hurler. So at 41, Dermot,
you decided to go there.
I decided to go for it.
Well, before we get to how you got on, because we're all intrigued.
Of course.
Because we can't help but put ourselves in that position.
Yep.
What is the allure of hurling, do you think? Is that it is completely unique to us? Is it the skill level? Why? Why do you feel less of an Irishman having that? Why is it so important?
Because I think we kind of talk out of both sides of our mouth about hurling a little bit. You know, like we're more than happy to say that it's our national sport. You know, we're more than happy to say, oh, if we're sitting in a pub and an American tourist is watching us, watching a Munster Hurling Championship game, he says, what are we watching here, you know? And we'll, you know, put our pint down and gaze off into the middle distance and start talking about Cúchulainn and, you know, 3,000 years. And, you know, like we do kind of lean into the idea of hurling as this entirely unique cultural touchstone for us. But at the same time, half of us never actually get to play it, you know? So I, like, that was a big draw to me. Also, we can't over egg the sort of Cú Chulainn side of things. Like, forget about all of that. Just sit down and watch a hurling game. It's so good. It's just so entertaining, so fast. Like, I pinpoint a moment in the Cork-Limerick semi-final last year. It's like the 46th minute. There's 52 seconds of play. And in that 52 seconds of play, there are 7 turnovers, 2 goal chances, 2 probable red card tackles, and a point at the other end to which the goal chances were. It all, like, it, and at the end of it, Croke Park erupted into a noise that literally I'd never heard anything like in my entire life. So, like, you can kind of, you can go deep on the cultural side of things.
But isn't it as well a beautiful combination? There's a lot of strands all meeting in sort of a perfect moment of flow state. So you have this incredible skill level of just being able to run with the schlitter on the end of a hurl, you know, to be able to see what's happening around you at high speed, to be able to balance and do all these things, take aim, fire it over a bar, you know, 65 yards away. It's a coming together of all these things.
Yeah, it is. And I think that that was maybe the key lesson that I took from my own personal experience.
And okay, well, let's go there. So tell us about that first day when so you go down to your local club. What's the club again?
The place where I was playing in Dublin, I would have been knocking around in the Good Council pitch there because it's literally right beside my house.
That was just you and your dog.
That's just me, literally me and my dog.
Yeah.
And so the idea started to percolate, and then, you know, last February probably, I went to my editors in Penguin Sandy Cove and said, listen, you know, I have this idea. And we just kind of ran with it, and it happened so fast that, I mean, in April, there I was in Unshannafobble GA Club in Waterford, in the Waterford Gaeltacht. Now, I should say that I didn't stumble upon Old Parish by accident, Unshannafobble.
You've got a family connection.
Yeah, so my dad was born there, played for the club for years. So that was kind of the family element of it. My uncle John has been involved in Unshannafobble for years and years and years, for 60 years. And so when I was thinking about taking up hurling, I also wanted it to be an immersive experience, you know, because hurling isn't a thing that you can just train for 2 nights a week. You know, you can't spend 2 hours of your week and presume that you're going to become a good hurler. It is, you do actually have to throw yourself into it in a very real sense. And also, just from the point of view, if you're going to write a book, you know, you gotta
live it.
You gotta live it, and you gotta go for it.
Were you nervous about the fitness levels required? I don't know, but I would imagine. Do you have to be fitter playing hurling than, say, the likes of football that you would have played?
I would say a lot
of football people waving an angry fist at the radio now, going, "How dare you?"
Yeah, funny enough, I think probably Gaelic football you'd need to have a slightly higher aerobic fitness for, just because the ball can do so much more of the work. In hurling, you know, the ball just travels that much farther. So I think Gaelic football probably puts a higher emphasis on aerobic. And like, I've been playing football up in Dublin for Temple Oak Sing Street for the last kind of 7-8 years. And I mean, I'm an old man, Dermot, but I'm mooching around the place. You know, that side of things I wasn't too worried about. Or at least if I was worried about it, it was a good way down the list. You know, there was like risk of devastating injury. That was certainly higher up the list than aerobic fitness.
That would be my concern. Okay, well, take us then to the first training, the first game. You're talking out. It's Oscailga as well, which adds an extra element of difficulty.
Yeah, and you know, there is a thing as well that, you know, when you're terrible at one thing, it's kind of hard to also then volunteer to be terrible at another thing. So, you know, when you're terrible at hurling, to then also be terrible at the Irish is just, that's not great either. But I mean, all I could do was just throw myself into it, you know. So we took a couple of training sessions. A league game came up. That's fine. You know, I've only done a couple of training sessions. I'm not expecting to start or anything like it. Obviously, if I got 5 or 10 minutes, brilliant, amazing. I go down to the pitch in a monsoon. The club chairman comes up and he goes, he's my second cousin. He comes up and he says, listen, I think you might be starting today. He appreciated that I would have appreciated a bit of warning. So that's how it was.
And what was your feeling when he says that? Were you like, yeah, punch in the sky? Or, I mean, oh God.
I'm in a situation here where I'm writing a book. So this is good news, obviously, you know, from the point of view of
great research.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
in a, you know, a, my gut reaction might have been a slight, there may have been a slight element of fear. Dread seems like a big word, and yet, you know, it mightn't be that far removed.
Healthy anticipation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. So you throw yourself into it. You know, and I, there was so much I didn't know that there was so much that I didn't know to be afraid of, you know. So I felt really at the end of the day, I could probably struggle through here, you know. So I play full forward in Gaelic football. I'm playing full forward in the hurling team. So I know the basic movements required to create a bit of space for my teammates. There was a lot of that as the year went on.
A big forward as well. What height are you? 6?
I'm 6'5".
6'5". Yeah, okay, yeah. So you've got it, like, and compare me, you know, 5'9", yeah, compared to you going out on the pitch. Yeah. I know who's going to be more frightened. Yeah. That would be me.
But
right, so you're 6'5". You're up there. The game kick, the ball's thrown in.
You know, and to the untrained eye at that moment, I look like a hurler. You know, I've got a helmet, I'm holding a hurley, I'm on a hurling team. To the untrained eye, I would look like a hurler. But then the ball kind of comes near to me, and then, you know, it becomes... So, like, the first ball that comes to me, I remember this distinctly, because I'd been coached by a lot of my friends to just be, don't have very high expectations of, you know, how many touches of the ball you're going to get. I mean, I know you want to, like, be out here practicing, like, shots from 80 yards out and that sort of thing, but just remember, it'll probably just be you mullocking around with a ball on the ground in a ruck, trying to use your arse to get, like, enough room to get the ball out of the ruck. That's basically going to be your job. Yeah. So I was like, come on. And then the first ball comes to me, and I run out to it in the time-honoured fashion. And I'm like, okay, two hands on the hurley, just get the ball up into your hand, and then, you know, the game will happen from there, you know. But then I see a teammate kind of running, like, over my shoulder through on goal, and I was like, forget this. If I just add to the ball, just like a little touch, a flick, if you like, into his general direction, then, you know, we're bang, we're straight through on goal here. So obviously I attempt this extremely intricate movement, completely fail, and the ball runs past my hurley, through my legs, and I so I race into a ruck and, like, fly wildly, whack a corner back across the knee, and then I utter an expletive because I hit a dirty stroke that I didn't mean to do, you know. The corner back, completely unbothered, you know. He just turns to me, whacks me across my knee, and then it's like the ledger is balanced. There's not another word said. No one says anything. So I was like, okay, that's how this operates.
Yeah, you can't show weakness. You can't. Well, I used to be terrible when I was a kid playing sport because I'd always go, oh, sorry. Yeah. It's like, you can't be doing that on the hurling pitch.
No. So, I mean, that was the highlight of my first half. But as the game went on, and as you'll read in the book, I did actually manage to get a goal on my debut.
You scored in your first game.
Yeah, I mean, it owed about as much to Buster Keaton as it did to Joe Canning, to be honest. But
was it a goal mouth melee? Was it one of those where you just...
What actually happened was our best forward had been hitting points from basically all over the shop for the entire game. He had a shot from about 80 yards out. The ball hit the post. The goalkeeper had been wandering over in the direction of the left-hand post to try and cover the ball. He ran into the goalpost, fell over. The fullback that was on me, he was like, oh, jeez, what happened? Turned around, he fell over. And then I was 3 yards out, clean through, ball at my feet. And I was like, I can't believe it. I'm about to score a goal. And I was like, actually, you're going to have to do something here. So I tapped it out of my way, then tapped it into the net. And I mean, I had a goal on my debut. But Dermot...
Pats all round. Pats on the back all round. Sean Fubble celebrating like never before.
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't... This is not the attitude of a hardened winner. But as the goal went in and as I turned, jogged back to get back into position, I did have the thought, this would be an amazing time for them to take me off.
I peaked too soon.
Yeah. But anyway.
Did you agonise about buying a glove?
Oh, God, yeah. Honestly, this is... So, again, you'd be surprised at how many people, when I told them what I wanted to do, their first reaction was, oh my God, you'll get killed. And, I mean, that was kind of, like, that kind of unnerved me a bit, you know? But as it turned out, there were a couple of whacks on the hand or whatever, but what actually caused all the difficulty was the repetitive action of catching a slither, right? So, I'm left-handed, so I hold my hurley in my left hand and I'm catching with my right hand. So... Obviously, much of hurling training is just working on your first touch, working on your catching, all the rest of that. But I had developed like a bruise basically from like the my lower knuckle to the centre of my palm. And it was just going different colours, brown, green, yellow, brown, green, yellow for the entire summer.
Listen,
right?
When my daughter flicks the ball to me, it would leave a bruise. Like, yeah. Especially on a cold morning, that
listen,
smack of a
Dermot,
slither into the palm.
There are hurling men and women listening to the two of us now that are just appalled. But we're just giving you our lived experience. Okay?
I wouldn't be buying like some kind of sports glove. I'd be wearing oven gloves.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, the thought definitely crossed my mind. But so, I mean, within a week, I'm going to buy this glove. I'm going to wear this glove. But I actually just chickened out of it. I didn't like the message it sent that I could be terrible at hurling, but also soft, you know, like too soft for hurling. Mm. So in the end, I bought the glove, threw it in my gear bag, and then just left it for about a month and a half.
Well, what about the physicality of the game, though? Mm. I have a feeling that's something that, you know, those of us sitting in the stand or watching on telly have no real concept of the strength of the impact. I mean, you're in your 40s, you're playing against lads, you know, in player fit jerseys. Yeah. They're 19 and they're coming at you and they're probably 6'6". Like, what in one of those club games, what's the physicality like?
Like, it's not that far removed from Gaelic football. So the physicality wasn't a worry for me. But I do remember, like, before that first game, my mum and dad came down from Galway to come down for that first game. So, like, you know, they're GA nut jobs as well.
Were they wearing St. John's ambulance gear?
No. literally what Mab said to me was, before we began, she was like, you know, you should probably tell the man that you're going in on that you haven't played, you know, that you don't know what you're doing and you're a danger, is what she said, right? So, and I was appalled at this, absolutely appalled. But also, having thought about it, I was like, do you know what? That's actually not the worst idea in the world. So what I was more concerned about was that I had this lethal weapon in my hand and that out of ignorance or stupidity or like physical uncoordination or just not being used to the idea of holding a hurley, that I could injure somebody else. Like, that was my real concern, that I would be swinging so wildly or so stupidly. You know, like, the age-old thing, that this guy's dangerous because I don't know what he's doing because he himself doesn't know what he's about to do. Well, that's what I was more concerned about, even more so than my own safety.
Yeah, I guess if you don't know how to, say, in rugby, if you don't know how to tackle properly, if you don't have proper tackling etiquette form, you could end up injuring yourself and other people.
Yeah, that was really what I was worried about. I mean, if I've been knocked on my arse with shoulders for 25 years. So that was not a thing that I was worried about. It was actually more just the idea that out of stupidity, I could hurt myself or others. Mm. But thankfully, there weren't any major casualties. None that have presented themselves to me, at least.
Has it changed the way you watch hurling now? If you watch a game, are you seeing it differently?
Yeah, it has.
What do you wish people knew about it?
I don't think any of us sit down to watch the Ireland hurling final and say, you know, this doesn't look that difficult. But definitely you just have an appreciation for the level of work required to make hurling an entirely unconscious act, if you know what I mean. So Jamie Wall is one of the best young coaches in Ireland. He won the Fitzgibbon Cup with Mary Eye College in Limerick last year. And he's a good friend of mine. He would have talked me through a lot of this. And at one stage, when I was describing the various woes of being a terrible hurler, he said to me, hurling is not a thinking man's game. And it's the most profound line in the book, you know?
Yeah.
Because what hurling requires you to do is to get to a level of skill where the idea that your first touch has to be perfect, or, you know, your catching ability has to be perfect, that you don't have to, that you're not thinking about that at all. Like, the big problem for me throughout the summer last year was that I had to think about everything. So if the ball was coming into me and it was hopping like three times before it got to me, I'd have to, you know, I'm like, okay, get my hands in the right position, get my legs in the right position, get the hurley. And like, if you're at that playing sport, it's over. It's over.
It's not gone. A golf swing where you get to go through a checklist of 15 thoughts before you hit the
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that brilliant line of Anthony Daly's, you know, the hurling game is 1,000 mad things and then someone wins, you know.
Well, it's a lovely messages coming in, people doing their best to describe it. Bob says, hurling, you have a lethal weapon in your hands, but daren't use it as one. Speed, skill, athleticism and discipline unmatched in any other sport.
I do believe that. Mm-hmm. I do actually believe it. It's the fundamentals of the game are so difficult. other games you can kind of layer on until you get to a point where you're excellent, you know. But the fundamentals of hurling, like the central building blocks of the game, are so difficult that until you have those, you can't actually do anything in the game. And I think that that's what sets it apart. That's what our why your texture is 100% correct.
Well, you know, even though having heard all of this, and I suspect our brains are wired fairly similarly, I still think, no, I think I could be good at it.
See, but this is the thing.
I mean, only on a pitch filled with other men, this time in their 50s. It's their first time playing. If I could go up against them, I'd be okay.
Yeah, and I do have this image of hurling, right? Because it is gorgeous, but it's gorgeous to play competitively. It's also gorgeous just to go out and puck around with your daughter like you do, you know? Like the idea of it as catch in America, you know, the idea of father and son or father and daughter or mother and daughter throwing the ball back and forth to each other. Like that idea is lovely and beautiful and I think has merit. You don't have to be an idiot signing up to play hurling at 41 or 42 to actually have a relationship with the game that isn't just you sitting down to watch it on television. Hurling is actually there for all of us. It's a thing that you can play in the way that you played or that you play in the way that I played up until last year. I think that's beautiful as well. I'd love more people to just go out to Phoenix Park. Like the GA was founded because Michael Cusack just wanted to puck around in the Phoenix Park. You know, and that's an urge that we all have at various stages. So I think that there is space there for people in non-hurling backgrounds to just buy a hurley, just buy a couple of slitheries and just knock around. You know, like it's a beautiful thing without getting involved in the competitive side of things. I did it. I was stupid enough to go and write a book about it, Dermot. But even that's a beautiful thing to do.
We are glad you did write the book. If you've any tips on how telling my dog Buddy to give back the schlitter after I've hit it to him on the beach.
You just have to bring two or three. The only thing that makes them drop it is to have another one that looks even tastier.
Kieran Murphy, thank you so much. I love that conversation.
Thanks so much for having me, Dermot. I really appreciate it.
I know you're going to be at the Clifton Arts Festival on the 26th of September talking about this brand new book I have here in front of me. You'll have to sign it before you leave the studio.
Yes, I'm in the Marine Bar tonight for the launch in Old Parish. So if anyone is around Gaeltacht na Deirse or indeed rural West Waterford, the most beautiful place in the world, I will fight you to the death on that. Then the Marine Bar at 7:30 p.m. Joe Canning is coming along to launch it for me. And then next Friday, as you say, 5 o'clock at the Clifton Arts Festival. I'd love to see everyone there. So.
Old Parish, Notes on Hurling by Kieran Murphy. Thanks, Kieran. Great to see you. What's this about hard to take up a pastime in your 40s, says a message. Tell that to our ladies in active age, Oran Moore. Us tough cookies are taking up art, pickleball, sea swimming, yoga, tai chi and line dancing. All at the same time, I wonder. Among other pursuits, too numerous to mention, embracing it all. Fair play to you, the active ladies of Oran Moore.